Good evening and welcome to Living Clean and Sober with Johnny Rags, another installment of our Monday night gig. We have with us on the show tonight, to my left is Mike D, and to my right is, to the other right, is Steve D, and our...
Not brothers.
No, they're not brothers. Don't get it twisted. And we have our lovely... co-host and slash engineer, Stacy.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Stace. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for coming.
How are you?
I'm good. Happy Monday. We are the City of Angels, COARadio.com. City of Angels does a lot of neat things. If you want to find your niche with a volunteer, you can go to www.cityofangelsnj.org. Look around on there, see what fits you, and give us the help that we need. We're fighting a heroin epidemic on here, and just another week went by and another overdose death of someone I knew personally. So it continues, and, we have to trying to figure out how to help. So we got a lot of things going on. But I got two guys here who are in long-term recovery. They value their involvement in the fellowship that they attend. And let's get right to it. Again, guys, welcome to the show. Let's start with you, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Better than I have been, you know, as with many of us, even in recovery, we go through ups and downs, and I'd been on a down a couple of months ago. I mean, you kind of know about that, and, you know, just with, some perseverance and being involved in my own recovery and the fellowship and the people that I know that are in my network, I feel better now. You know, and it's really about perspective more than anything, you know. So I am doing good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Mike, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really good, actually. If I wake up sucking air in the morning, I'm winning, you know.
Exactly.
Everything after that's a plus.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. So, you know, what we talk about on here is a lot of... a lot of guests that I have, their experience, what they'd like to see happen as far as funding, help from somewhere, because we keep seeing these things happen over and over, and the numbers are getting higher, and we're back in the same spot that we've always been in, you know. And it's tragic when you talk to a mom or a dad and they wonder what they could have done, you know. And at that point, I've been in a lot of situations where I just didn't know what to say, you know. But to let them know it wasn't their fault. Like, there was nothing they could have done. And so let's start out at the beginning. What happened that you came into recovery?
Well, for me... It was, it was what I didn't know at the time was a complete surrender, you know, because I didn't know that that's what it was at the time, mm-hmm. But it was, you know, that's what it was, and it was just giving up because I couldn't keep living the way I was living, and, for a long time people were telling me, and there were clues and hints. I mean, you know, you hear this a lot. I hear it a lot. You know, the party was over way before I stopped doing anything. And one day I just finally said, you know what? I was willing to take the help that was offered me so many times. And I ended up going into a facility. And it was a relief. You know, it was really a relief. Really all I wanted to do was get whatever was inside of me out of me. You know, and really it was about communicating with somebody that could relate to me. You know, and you know, go, yeah, you know what, it's going to be okay, and they knew exactly what I was going through, you know, because, you know, when when you don't know any better, you think you're the only one that's going through what you're going through, and that nobody else can relate.
Yep.
And that's what I find key in my recovery is the ability to find people that you can relate with, that you can tell and be completely honest with about the craziest, most insane stuff, you know, and they just go, yeah, I know what you mean. And there's a connection there, you know, and once I found that, you know, that gave me hope to continue doing what I was doing. And there was a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety, a lot of unknown. You know, I'm not comfortable with not knowing. You know, I want to know. Right. Am I going to be okay tomorrow? Am I going to be okay a month from now? What's going to happen to me 10 years from now? You know, but that is part of, you know, at least for me, addiction-wise, my addiction keeps me focusing on some of that stuff that I have no control over. You know, when really the most important thing is, you know, right here in this moment, today, you know, and... You know, that's what I learned. That's, you know, one of the many gifts that I've gotten from being in recovery is knowing that, believing it, you know. And I've been moving right along ever since, you know, ups and downs.
What I found, and I talk to a lot of recovering people in a day's time, and, you know, we have them on the show and all that, and the common theme is desperation. And like you said, I mean, I didn't know that it was that at the time. I didn't recognize it. If you would have told me you are desperate,
it was normal. Right?
Yeah, right.
It was just pain.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pain that we were used to.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And it's almost gets to a point where the sick becomes
normal.
The only thing you know, normal,
yeah, normal.
Quote unquote. Familiar what do you pain. Think about that, Brown Eyes?
I was trying to make sure that we were on the air, so I couldn't really focus.
Stacey's sweetheart. We love her.
Stuff we just
it really, you sound great.
People
I don't know if I was listening. No.
You have any questions for any of our guests?
No, because I wasn't listening.
There's a shocker, and I did not
listen.
No,
I'm listening now.
Okay, she's cool.
I'm
she is. She is focused. I see that focus.
I was an addict long before I ever picked up. You know, the desperation was.
I agree with that.
The first time I got high was at the dentist office on nitrous oxide. And, you know, I got blown away. And, you know, any inhibitions that I had, you know, I was short and fat and, you know, I always felt like a third wheel, you know. That all disappeared that day, you know. And I would go in there and get my braces adjusted and, you know, you give me the gas, you know. And then I found out that Huff and aerosol cans would give you the same effect. And when the pharmacy wasn't selling to me anymore, I went and started huffing gasoline. And when that started to give me, you know, headaches, I switched to unleaded gasoline so that I could keep that line.
But still know? High octane, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be high.
That was
octane.
A Friday night, you know.
Right, yeah. Right.
But, you know. What I know now in hindsight, that it was about what you were talking about. You know, the desperation comes from a spiritual bankruptcy. And when I say spiritual, you know, when I was growing up, it wasn't really cool to believe in, like, spirits. You know what I mean? Like ghosts, you know, and spirits and all that, you know.
Right.
But, you know, so I kind of pushed that away. But at the end of my addiction... And in recovery, I found out that I'm not just a meat machine, you know, who's trying to, you know, live a life that whoever ends up with the most toys wins. You know, the American dream, per se, the illusion that, you know, you got to struggle to achieve this goal that's like a dog chasing his tail. You know, I discovered that I had a spirit, you know, and in the process of trying to acquire the American dream, I kind of pushed that spirit down and went, you know, just trashed all my morals, you know, in order to get to the end goal. But today it's about believing that I have a spirit that needs to be listened to and nurtured. And for me, that was the core of the disease of addiction.
You know? Yeah. I like what you said about having the disease of addiction before you picked up, because yeah. I recognize.
Oh, yeah.
All the behavior that I had displayed, which was, it was all self-absorbed, self-centeredness that I operated out of. See, I like that term because there was an old methadone counselor who, after I got clean, we became friends, and I used to see her. Like, we'd go to the park, and we would talk. And she would say, well, you're operating out of this or out of that. And I said, what is this operating out of? What is this nonsense? And she explained it to me. She said, well, if you believe this, that's what will dictate your behavior. And it made sense. And I used to debate with her a lot, like, about different things. And she would get to the point where she'd go, no, John, no. But my point is, I looked back at all that and saw that I was pretty selfish, you know. I had three brothers, and it was all about me. I knew how to get the attention from my parents. And, you know, so that, all that is classic addiction. I went to a psychiatrist, and he told me, you're the textbook example of an addict. I was like, well, that gave me more reason to say. I came home. My mom said, what happened? Because they were pulling their hair out of her head. They didn't know what to, and all four of us were addicts. So she was, you know, it
she
was like.
Right. I don't really like the term, a textbook example of an addict.
Yeah, what is that? You know?
We come in all shapes and sizes.
But at the time, but I used it. Right.
I hate when people look at me and are like, well, like, you're so pretty, or that's egotistical to say. But yes, it said, like, or you're so nice and da da da. Like, how could you use drugs? Like, I'm like,
right.
It does not discriminate on what I look like, how rich I am, how poor I am.
Right. One thing that I think is, like, really, you know, special about being involved in recovery is that, like, you're in a group, you know, in a room with anywhere from like 10 to 20, 30, sometimes more than that, people. And there's a lot of people there. Now, I didn't know where to go to get advice on my life. I didn't go anywhere. I always relied on my own intuition, which is really bad. You know,
right.
It wasn't the best. And it's because I didn't learn how to do that. There weren't people there to teach me how to do that. But when you're in a room with all these people, and a lot of these people were bad people, you know, criminals, you know, people that robbed and stole and manipulated and were, you know, quote unquote, like, pegged as the worst and dregs of society. Right now we're all in a room, and everybody being involved in recovery to a certain extent, these are the people I go to now to get advice on my life.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
So, I mean, recovery changes you, you know, and really, like, you know, John, I know you well enough to know that, like, one of your main motivators is to help the next person, the next addict. And that's what it is. That just blows me away. And I share about that a lot. The fact that, you know, I get help and advice on my life from recovering addicts that at one point or another in their life, we're not capable of being, you know, contributing members of society.
Yeah.
But recovery, you know, gets us to that point, you know, if you're willing, you know. And that's pretty amazing to me.
It is. It's when you think about the whole deal and you talk about a miracle, I was the kind of guy that thought, well, you could get clean. And Mike, you can too. Stacy, you should have no problem being clean, but I can't.
Right.
I never thought that it could happen for me. And there were people just like me who did what I did and, you know, all that and managed to be clean. And when I saw that, but that the reason why I brought that up, the textbook example, because I took that as a pass.
Right.
For the next 5 years, I told my mother, I said, the doctor sent him a textbook example of an addict. There's nothing I could do.
Right.
So I'm doomed.
Right.
So he says, what will work for you? I said, Valium 10.
Valium 10.
Three refills, please. You know, and he was a big time psychiatrist in Center City. You know, so and then again, this is how manipulative I was. I told my mother, if this guy don't know, then nobody does. You should see his office.
Right.
If you want to call in 609-241-1703 and join this discussion, we're having a nice little chat here about addiction and how we got clean and all that. But I want to ask everyone here tonight about, what do you think of? And these are the kind of questions that I'm always asking myself, where we can make it a better show. We can have more involvement with people. People will be more interested in dialing the phone and calling in and asking for help, or if they need help, asking a question if they don't know. So I want to, I'd love to get more people involved with that. And my question is, and I hear it all the time, and we talked about it at dinner, a heroin epidemic. Now, just where do we go next with this thing? Like, what does it mean to any of us? Like, I wanted to bring that out. So what does it mean to you when someone says that?
Says heroin epidemic?
Yeah.
I mean, this has been going on for how long, you know, and it just happens that I think it's a lot to do. I don't want to say this generation, but, like, I'll talk to a lot of people, and they'll even say, like, weed is different today. Like, everything is just so, the way it's chemical, whatever you want to say, or this generation, I just think, is very different. Like, my mom said, you know, a lot of, like, her friends are alcoholics, or it just happened that I think pills is huge, the pill mm-hmm. epidemic, and heroin is just so, it's just so easy to get. I'm sorry. And it's not, like, I don't want to have, like, false hope, but it's never going to stop. I mean, we've lost 7 people in Florida in the last 2 weeks, and another one today, a kid named Ryan. My prayers go out to his family. It's just, I think this generation, and they're starting so much younger. I'm glad that they're getting it now. Scary. When I see, yeah, oh my gosh. Because, I mean, I started fairly young, 19, you know, with a needle in my arm, but, like, I mean, I'm going to meetings with girls that are maybe 16 mm-hmm. that are selling their body. All things that I've done. It's just, I don't know. I just, it's hard to see. It's hard to hear. And unfortunately, like, it's just, we can't, I promote it as much as I can. I mean, recovery is a beautiful thing. Like, I don't, it's attraction rather than promotion, though. You know, I can't sell someone recovery. They have to, that desperation we're talking about.
Yeah, you can
about.
Only carry the message.
There's only so much I can do, but they're just getting younger. And they're dying faster. I mean, I guess it's fentanyl. I mean, there's crocodile now, things that I've never even, like.
Yeah, I don't.
And the access, you know, if, I mean, really my solution, let's shoot every drug deal in the corner. I'm sorry. Just kidding. That's a joke. But if there's nothing I can do, and it's just, it's sad. Even from every perspective, from a parent, from an addict, from a non-addict, it's just, it's something that unfortunately we deal with on a daily basis. And, I just know that us as fighters, and we're all fighters, but I know that I earned my seat in the rooms, and I fought hard to get it. And there's plenty of times that I should have died, and I'm here. And, you know, I mean, if you guys have anything else, I mean, it's just, to me, it's this generation is screwed.
It's society's outlook in general. Like, when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, they were telling us that we weren't even going to have food anymore, that was going to be replaced with a nutrition pill. You know, and that we were going to just eat
like
pills.
Star Trek,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's not an accident. You know, that's indoctrinated that, you know, pharmaceuticals and pills are the way to go. They're all your answers. And what I see today is people get in, you know, get pain medication. They get the oxys, you know, they're giving them to people younger and younger. And once you get hooked on them, heroin's cheaper.
Yeah,
you know, and it's readily available. Unfortunately, it's readily available. You know, when you get these guys, you know, over in Afghanistan, they'd have to walk by the poppy fields and not burn them because that's the main crop of the Afghans, and they're not allowed to. It's going to come into this country, you know, and it shouldn't be that readily available.
Well, plus the problem, you know, you have to identify the problem to get the solution. Because if you don't think there's a problem, you don't need a solution.
Right.
The problem is, you know, everybody is, you know, Stacy said it, they're a lot younger. And it's pride, because there's a lot of families that suffer with this silently.
Yes.
They don't make that point.
They don't bring it up. You know, they live on the main line or in Princeton or no offense to them people that live there.
No, but it's showing up in their towns now. So
those areas of the country. They're all over the country. And I was going to bring that point across, because you and I have both like done some research and looked at numbers.
Oof.
And the numbers don't lie. I mean, they're only going up, right? And a lot of it is denial. It's denial about not just the parents, but the people that, you know, schools, all the way up to colleges and elementary schools. You don't have to go to elementary schools, but it does. It starts, you know, it starts with education. I mean, I remember when I was in, like, elementary school, and this is, you know, a long time ago. It was when Reagan and Nancy Reagan and Ronald
Say No.
Just Say No.
Oh, the DARE program. I got that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, oh, God.
Yeah. And,
that's no longer
again,
in schools?
It's... No, it is. It's about the people, you know, there's a lot of people, parents and teachers and principals and just that, you know, that oversee maybe our kids on any given day not wanting to admit that there's actually a problem, even if you show them the numbers. They're like, no, we don't have a problem. You know, and it's that's where the pride, you said, you know, like you said, pride comes in and people not wanting to admit. But in that process of not admitting, even when like their kids are screaming, like, you know, and we know the signs, and education would let, you know, and that's even more so, people will deny the education because they deny there's a problem.
Well, that's, you know, that's the bigger problem, because how do you educate somebody that
doesn't think there's a problem?
Right.
Yeah, right.
So intervention and education is great. And kid, and back when I was in grade school, which was in the 60s, they didn't have that kind of stuff. No one came in and said, oh, you know. But the only people that I knew who were heroin addicts were older dudes, like the older hippie dudes.
And it was like that back then. You know? It wasn't 14, 15-year-old
girls. No, because it wasn't so readily available. They came. I was clean for a long time, and somebody came to the meeting, and he was kicking something. And I said, I'm thinking it's methadone because it's all I knew. So he said, no, I just took a quarter of a Suboxone. And I said, what is that? Right. And I had never heard of it. I had no reason to because I was clean, you know. And I said, you got to tell me what that is. Like, what is it? Is it pill methadone? What is it? Because that's the mentality I had. If you had a dope habit and you wanted to get off of it, you'd go to the methadone clinic. But, of course, I was a villain of circumstance, not a victim.
Right.
And I went there and did both. But, and that goes, you know, that's not even...
Pretty much when they send you home from rehab now, they say if you're a heroin addict, they send you home with Suboxone.
Right.
You know, which is...
And I still, to this day, don't know the point of it. I mean, I know you detox people with it, but what's the point of it, Stace? I don't get it.
There's a lot of fear over detoxing. I've heard that because that was one thing I never really dealt with, was that people have trouble stopping and because of the fear of the detox. And that's where Suboxone.
Oh, withdrawal, yeah. Oh, absolutely. That kept me out there how long? Yeah.
And that's like people will, I hear that a lot. It's like, I didn't want to stop because I didn't want to go through that.
Uh-uh.
So Suboxone is that, well, you want to
it's a little chill,
like
yeah. It's a little
but what, help, what ends up happening is people just stay on it.
Right. Yeah, Suboxone maintenance. I mean, like, you'll know, I met a girl the other day, I won't say names. She's 18 years old and she's been on methadone for about a year now.
Mm.
My people that live in my neighborhood have been on it 5 and 7 years. And I'm sorry, but I don't consider it clean.
No,
I want to reverse back to something you said. You said something about the pharmacies.
Yeah.
Now, they're, to me, drug dealers just on the market. Today, another thing about, like you said, about the heroin epidemic, they are, like, if a kid is, like, bouncing off the walls, he's ADHD, he's bipolar, he's give him Adderall, let's get him Ritalin, you know.
What drug can we get him on?
It wasn't that big when I was growing up, and I'm definitely ADHD. I don't take meds for it today. But
I was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic when I got clean.
You can't diagnose somebody who's getting clean. I mean, you really can't. I mean, they diagnosed me as everything when I was, and I was like a walking talk. I still am a kind of a walking talkie pharmacy, but on things that I now know work for me, you know, but as in treatment. So going forward with Suboxone and all that, I was out there for 5 years before I ever touched Subutex. There's Suboxone and Subutex. There's a strip and a pill. And I think it's amazing for detox. I do. I mean, I don't know. Back in the day, did they like tie you to a tree or something? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
that's how I heard it was, though. Back in the day, they'll just throw you in a basement, give you a cup of water and crackers. I could not deal with that, but it is so helpful. But this is the thing. See, parents are pushing it more. Like, my mom almost pushed a Vistral shot on me, which is I would never do. You know, if I will not be relying on something for the rest of my life just like I was my drug. You know, and I'm sure, you know, as Johnny said, like, I was a real heroin addict. There was no, for multiple years, and I just don't believe in taking another substance every day. For detox, it was amazing. I think it's very helpful, and it gave me that relief. I'm like, how much pain am I going to be in? Well, this is really going to moderate. You still go through it, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm. You want freedom.
Yeah, you know, right. I could not do it on my own. I kicked this time on my couch, but that's because some circumstances, but it was not easy. I would have loved to have Subutex or Suboxone, but... Again, they're prolonging it because they think it's keeping kids sober. But I'm hearing now that people are shooting Subutex. People are, you know, people are getting a certain amount of 110 milligrams of methadone when, like, now hospital, or now people won't detox you in the state of New Jersey unless you're 40 milligrams or less. except if it's a hospital.
Yeah, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to judge people because, like, I've never had to go through that.
Oh, I'm judging. You know? It's not sober.
But like...
Sorry.
Isn't it like a main, you know, again, isn't the point to go through the debt, but also to wean off of that within a reasonable amount of time, not a year, not 5 years.
Well,
that's the idea. Right.
That's the idea. But what is your, here's the thing. And you might remember this, in the '80s, everybody got 28 days. There was exceptions. Like a couple of facilities had a candidate program, which was a year. You know, but you go down in phases, right? But then the insurance company says we're not given 28 days anymore. So the ingenious rehabilitation centers that they are said, okay, you're bipolar, you're manic, and you're paranoid schizophrenic, and that's how we're going to get around the 28-day thing. So you got as much time as you needed because it was decided to be unconstitutional if you didn't give. And that's when Nancy Reagan came out with that Just Say No stuff. And that's when they were running treatment out. Because I ran it out. I went to 9 treatment centers in the
80s. They wouldn't even let me into rehab. So paranoid schizophrenic, I wasn't going to do them or anyone there any good.
Yeah. Look at it as a mental health. They don't look at it as mental health as like a problem.
Right. What's amazing to me, too, is the fact that, like, you know, I just recently, and I've done this more than once, and not to experiment, you know, to see what would happen, but because I thought, like, I went to my family doctor recently, and I just said, well, I'm feeling kind of depressed, and boom, just started throwing meds at me, and actually put me on 2 meds, and this is, they're doctors, they're very educated people, but in some ways, they don't know a lot about that particular, if you go to your PCP, they don't really know about mental health that much. So they threw 2 medications at me.
Protocols to follow.
Right. Which criteria we found out later on, when you put them together and you take them together, it's extremely dangerous to do that. And I almost, you were there.
Big red X's, never did these 2.
I didn't think I was going to survive. Right. That's how I felt. And I was clean. But here's the thing, like, they just readily, just like you were saying, Stacey, that like, well, you know, this kid's ADHD, this is just start throwing pills, you know, and not to get off the subject of heroin, but I mean, that's kind of where it starts. It's just,
absolutely.
And you know, my experience, because I have 2 daughters, and John and Mike, you know them very well, and I feel grateful and blessed that they have not gone down that road, but that doesn't mean it won't happen. Mm. Right. But when I was growing up in recovery, I like to say, I was honest with them. I talked to them as if they were other addicts. I didn't like beat around the bush when it came to stuff like that. And I think they benefited, you know, as a parent, I feel they benefited from that type of conversation when it came to that subject. There's a lot of parents that either won't do it or don't know that they should do it. Like, my mom never knew to have a conversation with me. She just said, excuse me. She just said, if you were ever to like smoke pot or something, just tell me. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, right.
And then I never did, you know. And I mean, not because I was trying to go against it, but I just never did. Like with my kids. And the kids these days, if you allow them to be and you treat them like adults when they're, you know, because they do, you know, they may not have the coping skills, but they do think and are able to make decisions. You know, I found that talking to them and anybody that's not necessarily educated in that subject, being honest with them, is the best way to do it, you know.
Right.
Don't beat around the bush. Don't deny that there's a problem.
Right, you know? and that was exactly what happened with my daughter. I didn't see her enough to know. Like, when I would talk to her, I sensed something was amiss, but I couldn't put my finger on it, and didn't want to say because I think everybody's an addict.
Well, there are a lot of people that don't necessarily use a substance. They could definitely benefit from a program of recovery.
And I have a lot of friends that are addiction doctors. You take, and I'm telling you, that you wouldn't think this, in some way, largely disagree with me, but you have a physician here who is a PCP who serves that purpose, and then you have an addiction doctor who knows, maybe they might be addicts themselves or not, but they're in tune with addiction medicine.
They can relate.
per se, like not, okay, general practitioner, okay, I'll give you, you know, take this and call me in a week, you should be fine or whatever. But it's not like that because the disease of addiction is internal. So I could have all the knowledge that you give me. It's not going to do me any bit of good because if it's internal, like with my daughter, I didn't want her to be an addict. You know, she grew up with me. You know, I was a single dad, so there was a lot of sick stuff going on. You know, not, but lots of women, you know. So the message I gave her was, well, this is okay.
Yeah.
Unconsciously, not, hey, Rocks, this is what, you know what I'm saying? So right. So it being internal is something that baffles parents because they don't understand why their kids do what they do. Okay. And sorry. My lovely engineer and slash host, I love that, co-host, just informed me that we're at the top of the hour. You're listening to this www.coaradio.com. If you want to get involved with us here, you could go to the website www.cityofangelsnj.org. And I forgot to mention our co-host, Ken McDonald, who's enjoying Florida right now.
Is that where he is?
Yeah, Ken. Yeah. I hope he's going to call in.
Cold up
he better call in.
I told him how cold it was yesterday. He didn't believe me. But anyway, I was down at the baseball field like a nut. I went there. And you know what I did after a while? I went to a meeting. Yeah. I said, I'm not doing this. I'm too cold. I'll see. But anyway, that's the neat stuff we do. Get on the website. Check us out. If you have any comments or questions for my guest, 609-241-1703 is the number to call. We'd love to hear from you. Stacy is anxiously awaiting your call.
I'm just making sure it's one.
And back to the show. Yeah, so that's the problem with that. And that's part of the problem with the parents because, you know, you could educate, you could intervene, you can do all that. And our book says it. You know, you can beat them up, you can do whatever. But if they don't want to stop, they're not going to.
Yeah. Addiction has a stigma attached to it, too.
And that's part of the problem.
Moral deficiency.
Absolutely.
That has to kind of be looked at. You know, it's not. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family, and, you know, my upbringing was pretty good. You know, back then, my dad slapped me around a little, but overall, you know, the first time I got high, it felt really, really good. Right now?
Absolutely.
And I didn't become an addict, you know, I had all the predisposition to become an addict because, you know, I felt like things would make me feel better and things didn't make me feel better. And then I found getting high and it did make me feel the way I wanted to feel. And that's what addiction's about. It feels really good. But in order to admit that you have a problem, you know, you have to be willing to save your ass and you can't save your ass and your face at the same time. Mm-hmm. You might have to go ask for help and realize that you're not a bad person getting good. You're just a sick person getting well.
Wow. Yeah.
You know.
And if there's a line in our book that says the last thing to be lost is the stigma of being an addict.
Yes. I'm not really ashamed
in the symbol.
Of being an addict today.
Nice.
Me either. I mean, I'm cool with it, you know, because I have a blessed life. Look like you wanted to say something.
No, I'm just. I might have wanted to.
I hope he calls with our word of the week. He's got it. I asked him today.
Okay. So. Better call.
Well, you know what, Mike?
He's too busy basking in the sun, although it's dark now.
I've had conversations. I've heard Mike, you know, we talk a lot. And, you know, one of the things that he says that I can relate to is like, almost like, thank God I am an addict. And that I found recovery because there was an answer, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, it's almost, you know, I wouldn't have had it any other way because otherwise I would have been wandering around, running into walls, getting advice from other people that didn't know what I was going through and maybe would not have survived, literally. But it's okay. Like, I'm okay. You know, I don't announce it to the world when I'm out at work or, you know, like, you know, but...
Yeah, I know.
With people that can understand and people that can relate.
I used to.
You know,
you got pink hair. You would.
And here it is. We were talking about that just a minute ago, where like, an addict is, I mean, addiction is a problem. You know what? I mean, I would say over 90% of the globe, people on Earth suffer from some sort of addiction.
That's right. Moore's Law.
See, I don't focus. I don't focus on the substance. I focus on the addiction. Because there are people that have never touched a drug in their life, never done anything to change physically their mind, mood, you know, or anything. But they'll gamble or they'll shop. And the behavior and the thought process and the feeling you get when you do it is the same. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same.
But it's not tangible. That's the problem.
Right.
In other words,
it doesn't physically affect you like a drug would. But
I was just going to say, nobody's going to beat you up over, but they will. if you're gambling.
But step one in basic text does explain it's your addiction.
Right.
And I was relieved of that because I know that I have a lot of addictions. I mean, every time I get clean, I start drinking Red Bull like a fiend. Yes.
Right.
And 5 hours. Oh, yeah. Guilty as charged.
Yeah, she picks one up off the table.
But I will be honest, you know, from my addiction, other addictions came into play. A sex addiction, a shopping addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just because I got clean, it didn't stop. You know, like they say, you can remove the drugs and alcohol, but you still have you.
Right.
And there was something, oh my God, what did you say? I was so... You said a life beyond your wildest dreams.
Yep.
Now, what does that mean to you?
Right. That's a good question.
You know, because because I've lost some time. I had 3 years and I, like you said, I was grateful for my relapse. I was. It wasn't harder for me to, like I always say this, it was easier for me to stay out there than come back.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really humble myself and total my car and a lot of damage before I dug a basement to my rock bottom this time. But I am so grateful that I'm an addict because, yes, I may take everything to the extreme, but I love to the extreme. I care to the extreme. I do everything good and bad to the extreme, you know, and thank God. And you said people would benefit from the steps or, you know, whatever, even not an addict, you know, like you said, people take exercise or whatever. And I'm like, well, we'll take a look at yourself, buddy, but I can't say that to everybody, you know, but I think you guys triggered that out, a lot of good things, but... What does that mean to you? Like, well, the streets. What does that mean to you?
It was two things. Like you were saying, I know that like even doing things to extreme, you know, even not using, you can take something that's good for you.
And
just run with it until it's not good for you anymore. That's what addiction does. Yeah, obsession. But what wildest dreams? Like when I first got clean, and I heard that, you know, my mind will go to tons of money.
Yeah, the nice
house. Mm-hmm. You know, just everything that I thought was supposed to be what I thought I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got, and relapse is a part of my story, and you know, but I realized that my wildest dreams were things that I could never imagine happening. What turned out happening for me, wildest dreams wise, was something that I never thought would ever happen, ever.
Happened. Nice, I like that.
To benefit me in some way, not in a selfish way.
Well,
like,
put. Yeah.
You know, it's things that I couldn't have possibly imagined occurring in my life after having time clean. And they weren't big, extravagant things. It was just something that I never thought could possibly ever happen. And even like, you know, like having my two daughters, like, be cool human beings, even though I was their father, you know, and spent some, you know, spent some time raising them on my own, you know, and I'm grateful for their mother being back in their lives. That was one thing I never thought would happen, mm-hmm. ever.
Right.
And it did. And you know, that's what Wildest Dreams to me kind of turned into. It wasn't this, you know, pie in the sky type of situation. It was just these things that occurred that I thought would never even be possible,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I couldn't even now imagine what's going to happen a year from now.
Oh,
we have a call.
There's our co-host.
Hello.
The hostess with the mostest.
It's kind of my spiel on wildest dreams.
Oh God. Hold on, Ken. Let me put you on speaker.
Ah.
Okay.
Is this our co-host? Hey. What's up, my brother?
I hope it's raining down there.
From sunny Florida.
I just remembered I walked off location. I said I gotta call my brother.
My man. What's going on down there?
Nothing, man. Just had some dinner with my nephews.
Nice. Are you listening to the show?
No, they walked away.
Are you
listening? Are you listening to the show?
Am I listening? No, no, I'm not. I was with...
Way to support us, Ken.
Thanks, brother. You're killing us over here.
He's on vacation. Well, give him a break.
Sometimes you support his spirit.
Or sometimes you're just into your own self.
Yeah, that's right. It's maybe more like that.
You gotta.
That's true.
Can you bring me back a key tag or something?
What's that?
A magnet. Can you bring me back a souvenir?
She wants a magnet or a t-shirt or something.
A magnet?
A shot glass. Yeah, a souvenir, Ken.
She could put it on her fridge.
And bought me this shirt.
I take money as well.
Yeah, we want that Florida money.
She's the best, this one.
Well, you better get shopping.
Bring us back some sand.
Yeah, we haven't seen stepped on sand in a while. You have though, like more sometimes, somewhat regularly lately. I need time off, so you got to get your ass back here and do the show.
Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Good. Well, we got to wait till next week to talk to you on the air again. So.
Yeah.
So. You're not listening? I wanted you to critique what we were doing here.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to.
I gotta be you this week, Ken.
Stacy's doing.
I don't think the two of you need critiquing. I mean, you have Mike and Steve there with you. So I'm sure, everything's just falling into place.
It is, always
cool
does.
Guys from Bucks County.
Yeah.
That's what they call themselves.
Corporate zombies.
Ace and what?
Ace and Slick. Those are our rock star names.
Ace and Slick to refer to them.
Yeah, there you go.
Did you get a word of the week for us?
I did, yeah. Enlightened.
What is it?
Yeah.
Enlightened.
Enlightened.
You told me that today. I thought you were going to get a different one.
These are so repetitive. Yes, enlightened. Ken.
Is that like being on a diet?
Kind of crapping out on him.
Yeah.
Did
you charge your phone from today?
Enlightenment is having or showing a rational, modern, and well-informed outlook. Mm-hmm. That's my word of the week.
All right. Sounds like a lot of words.
But today I had a very enlightened day, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds good. Well, I'll tell you what. I would have an enlightened day, too, just by getting on the plane to get to Florida, all right? So nothing else would have to happen. All I'd have to do is land safely, and I'll see you. I'm enlightened already, okay? So, but we love you. We miss you. Yeah, I hear you. Well, we're going to play a lot of golf next weekend, so get back here. Have a safe trip home. Thanks for calling, and we love you.
Absolutely.
I love you.
I love you guys too, man. Keep
going.
All right, bye.
I'm sure the Floridians would like to see another snowbird fly north for the
Probably. So we do a word of the week every week. Kenny's responsible for that, so that was his word.
That was Elaine. Good.
Yeah. We got to get some Google some new stuff.
All the words. Sorry, I'm not doubting Ken. It's just I thought I was writing something.
Yeah, I want some earth shattering.
Yes, there you go.
If you look at the word enlightened, the opposite of that would be heavy and pushing you down. If you have an attitude that's pushing you down or an outlook on life that's pushing your spirit way down and making you try to wonder why you're on this rock kind of thing, to be enlightened is to like let go of that and, look at life in a different perspective.
Nice.
It's a good word. Yeah.
Enlightening for me.
Yeah.
Like thunder and lightning. Yeah, it's good.
If you looked at a television set from the back for a half hour and someone asked you what you thought of TV, you would pretty much say it sucks.
Sucks, right.
But there's 359 other ways to look at that, Right. You just get up and become open-minded enough to look at things in a completely different way. Because obviously, my best thinking got me into this 12-step program. You know, my best thinking doesn't work, you know. But letting go of that ability to hang on to the tools that you have to survive, you know, and saying maybe my way is not the way. Maybe there is another way. You know, that's enlightenment, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's really hard to let go and to not believe that what I think and what I've learned growing up by, you know, whoever I was taught by, teachers, schools, television, whatever it is, it's really hard to let go and think that that is not the truth.
Right.
You know, and like you said, it is about letting go of what I've been conditioned to think is true.
Right.
And
very nice.
Because time and time again, over and over, you know, 99% of the time, what I think is going to happen, good, bad, or indifferent, never happens. Right.
Right.
It just doesn't, and you know, and even knowing that and having an experience of that occurring all the time, I'll come up to a situation where I think I know what's going to happen, and even with all the experience of that, I it's still hard to
let go. Right.
Yeah.
The things that people taught me might have been right. I perceived them way wrong. You know. Like right. Somebody said, money's good. You know, they were looking at it like I could buy bread. You know, and I was like, yeah, money's good. Money, you know, I took it to the extreme.
Yeah, that's right. The thing.
How I perceived it is everything.
Yeah, their version of good money is way different than my version right. of good money. You know,
I don't know.
I pictured limos and hookers. You know,
right. And they would be like, no, wait, whoa, that's not what we're talking about.
Hotel rooms,
right. Yeah, no.
I perceived it all wrong with you.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, that's...
You know what's on your mind. Sorry.
That would repel all my money, my attitude toward it. So, you know, it's like, hey, we got some good things coming up. What time did you get out of bed yesterday? God, be honest. You're on the air.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
I want to be honest,
it was Sunday, so...
Shit.
If that makes a difference.
Yesterday, probably around 11. That's been a solid number. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, you would have missed the breakfast.
But I start work tomorrow, so.
Over there?
I'll be there.
At the Trenton Thunder?
Yes. I get to meet all the players tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
I'm too excited about it.
So when am I coming?
You can come whenever you want.
Really?
I walk you. Like, honestly, God, come whenever you want.
I got it like that.
You got it like that. Food.
Beautiful.
Non-alcoholic nice. Beverages. We have all duels.
I'm good like that. No, I don't need no
duels. But I am working the bar.
Yeah, if I duels, I'll end up drinking like 24 of them.
Yeah,
just
right? You know what my answer to that is? It's funny you mentioned that. Because when I have sponsees that want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Drink all duels or like a non?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
I tell them, this is my response. It sounds really stupid. And all that, but it gets the point across. I tell them, you know what, I wanted to do something one time after I got clean. And they said, what was that? I said, I wanted to drink methadone, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
I said,
I wanted to smoke crack.
And then I said, well, if they ever make non-narcotic methadone, I'll drink it.
There you go.
So tell me what's wrong with this picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds insane.
Yeah, yeah. But really,
it's
like, right?
Thing. It's a
sense. It is though.
Taste. Yeah. Some people, yeah. I mean, isn't it? What is the hops? Is it that doesn't be
well,
or is it just the hops like?
Well, let me put it to you this way: anybody that's in recovery, then chances are that they didn't drink for taste.
Well, I was okay. Just
yeah,
that.
I drank for effect.
My sister's boyfriend is like a professional beer drinker. Like he gets beers from all over the world. And he's like, this one has this amount of hops, and this one is.
Well,
it,
is he an alcoholic?
Hops in it, or is that what gets you drunk?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Beer was not my drug.
No,
choice.
Because
not me either.
I was never a big fan of the taste of alcohol, really. Oh, anyway,
I didn't like it.
Right? I pulled my nose. But
I developed a taste for it. I like the taste of beer.
It's if you don't,
see,
you know, it's
like
kind
of
like.
On a hot summer day, you know, even a cold near beer is refreshing.
Yeah,
way better than Coca-Cola.
But the thing was, it didn't matter to me because I didn't drink because I liked the taste of it.
Nah.
There was just no.
Was
I mean, who would in their right mind down a fifth of vodka in like 10 minutes?
Tell them and say, "Oh, that was great."
Now whenever I smell like those hand gels, especially like the lemon scented one, it just makes me kind of ugh because it reminds me of that, you know. But yeah, I never. It was about getting mangled, getting smashed. Yeah, because definitely. Whatever I was dealing with at the time, I didn't want to deal with.
That's why I didn't drink, because it took too long.
Yeah.
I wanted
well,
like
you could
that.
Drink a fifth of vodka in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
take long.
Well,
yeah.
Wow.
But then,
yeah.
then you can't
wanna...
walk it. In
nah, then it's
minutes.
All good.
I was a two-beer queer. I was donezo.
But
yeah,
we met about
like the people who go get a case of near beers to have a party, you know, and make it just like, you know, an non-alcoholic party, you know, like that's
well,
gonna be
yeah, no,
that's
so
almost
like
to go back
that,
and drink
so
it
like,
again,
you know,
right?
Right.
That's almost like just going. It's just yet. It's about the behavior. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, everything about it is using, except for the fact that it's
right.
not alcohol. Like, mm-hmm. there's just but you can behave. You know, we know what it's like. I mean, we know people, and you know, I've probably participated in the behavior of being clean but living dirty.
Right.
Thank you. Oh my God, I was just talking about that last.
And I, you know, I've thoroughly come to believe over my recent experience in the last, you know, 3 to 6 months that addiction doesn't care whether you're clean.
No.
It'll kill you
clean
if you allow it. I don't have to use. I didn't have to use because you were there with me, Mike, and you were there, John.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to live. Like, I didn't think I was going to survive, and I wasn't using. Man, and that's what you were talking about, the spiritual, you know, the spiritual nature of our disease. For me, physically and mentally, like, I feel like I could survive if I was kind of like a little deficient in one or both of those. But when my spirit was gone, and this was after years and years and years of being clean, relapsing, because when I first got clean, I didn't know how messed up I was spiritually.
Right.
But when I had that spiritual death, it was the most painful thing that I think I've ever gone through.
Right. And to touch on what you asked earlier, you know, what is beyond your wildest dreams? You know. When I was out there using, I had a lot of wild dreams, and I lived a lot of them too, you know, until they became reality, and they always left me with an empty feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. My wildest dreams is just what he's talking about, being able to be okay in the moment, you know, to not feel like it's all going to explode, mm-hmm. to not feel like you need something to be okay,
yeah.
like to not feel like I'll feel okay tomorrow. You
or
know,
if this happens,
I can't
I'll
be
okay.
Yeah.
If all this happens, I can be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I just feel good today. And, you know, life on life's terms. You know, life, if everything goes exactly perfect, you know, nobody gets out of here alive. You know,
right.
We're all going to die.
We're all terminal.
That's right. We're all terminal.
Life is a sexually transmitted disease.
Yes, it is.
That
yes.
no one gets out of alive.
Correct.
About that.
But we
think
have,
about it.
But that's the truth.
I just didn't like the way you put
that. My wildest dreams is to be able to enjoy that space in between now and, you know, when my barcode comes up.
Yeah, no, I just...
That's my wildest dream.
Asking a lot of people that question and just, you know, I guess people in early in, you know, their recovery, just as well as myself, you know, I'm early in recovery again. But for me, it was like, you know, at first it was I chose my sponsor because of what she had on the outside, not on the inside. You know, this time I chose my sponsor on what she had on the inside. Like, I watched her for maybe 10 days. Even though everyone was like, yo, choose her. I was like, no, I got to see what she's about. You know, like, I can always tell, like I said, when someone has gotten 12 steps in their life, you know, as versus someone living dirty. Because I lived dirty for years in recovery, and they call it clean and crazy, which I just found out, which I love. I'm still clean and crazy, but I know that I'm, you know, I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I'm still crazy, and I still have my character defects come up, but I just, with knowing that they are character defects, and it's something that I can change, or something I can work on, that's a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, being alive is a life beyond my wildest
mm-hmm.
dreams.
Yeah.
You know, walking on my own 2 feet is a life beyond my wildest dreams, because for me, you know, it just, and for a woman, let's just say, my aspect of what I was doing for drugs and stuff, like, I was always dependent on a man. You know, it made me happy, and,
right.
and I made, you know, drugs is what made me happy, and not having that, and
or so we thought,
yeah, you know,
right.
and not having that, I still live with dirty behaviors like attention seeking, you know, all that stuff, and like I said, I'm glad for the rooms because they call me that,
well,
they call me out.
A lot of it is about minimizing things because I grew up thinking that things should be a certain way, and that you go to school, you go to college, you get a job,
yeah.
you stay
right.
there for 30 years, you retire, and they give
yeah.
you a gold watch, and then you go off into the sunset.
You're way big out. Yeah.
It's totally not that.
Move to Florida.
You know,
right.
It's hard
right.
for me to
play
understand,
golf.
You know, and
the American nightmare.
Yeah, it's like wait, you know, now what? You know, and it's about, like Mike was saying, it's like being okay with
mm-hmm.
whatever's going on around you and understanding that life is not fair, and it can be painful.
It's not easy.
But it, And it's never the same. Like, things change constantly, and it's about being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We don't like being uncomfortable.
Hell no.
You know, no. You, and when Mike was telling me, when I was going through what I was going through, Mike was like, you got to embrace it. I didn't know what that meant. Like, when I hear the word embrace, I think of a physical action that I need to grab it and do something with it. But actually embracing something is just letting it happen. Letting it go and letting it happen. When in my mind, I got to do something.
Change it, to make change it go away, fix it, beat right? it, stab it.
My
fix
addiction's it. Like, no, this ain't working. You got to do something about that.
Fix, it's manage, really about control.
Whether it's bad and it feels bad, or whether it feels good, because that's the thing about good and bad things. You know, all of it changes. Like, if you're feeling good, that it won't last. Like, it won't last forever. Mm-hmm. If you're feeling bad, that won't last forever either.
It'll pass.
But it's about letting it happen and not struggling, because there's a guy that told me, you know, pain plus resistance equals suffering.
Right.
So if you're in pain and you resist it, you're going
to
suffer.
Well, most of us do. That's
it's our normal reaction.
You don't have to.
But you don't have to.
No.
But it's really hard not to.
Yeah, what that does is gives us the freedom to be able to believe in something else. Like, if you ask me beyond my wildest dreams, I drew a blank because I didn't have it.
Oh, when I was first asked that, yeah, I didn't.
I was thinking, like,
y'all crazy.
Just,
I was like, car, yeah, like a full bank account.
But it was always from what I thought I wanted or what I was told.
Like, you put that in a good perspective.
Like, it was conditioned in me that was what a wildest dream was.
Right.
Is having the money, having the car,
limo.
Right?
Yeah. But
I didn't know any better because I didn't know, you know.
Well, it's the allure of it, of the fantasy.
Well, you can't get away with it, never from it, because you see it on TV.
Right.
You know, everybody lives a certain look. You know, if you don't have this car, you're a loser. Right. I mean, that's, you know, that's
what
you
see. Yeah, the commercial pretty much should say that.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Right.
That's what it's saying, and that's the word.
Yeah.
Getting high kind of connects that thought and that thing with your reality for a moment, you know. When you're hot,
yeah.
You know, you could be in an old rusted jalopy and, you know, it's a race car in your body,
you
know, like you're living that nightmare dream
And I got to tell you, when I was using, and this is crazy because this was a wild dream. Got 2 minutes. I used to, there was a point in my using years that I was a speed head. Okay. I used to melt down dioxins and sell them and keep the rest for myself. But anyway, one day I was really out there. I mean, I must have been up about 9-10 days by then. And I thought, this is what I thought. Wow, this is so bad that maybe someday, now this thought occurred to me when I was in the worst, that maybe someday I'll be able to talk about what happened to me and maybe have a way out of it. And I thought that, and like I was really excited, like I was getting.
They came up with this, like,
yeah, you know. Yeah, and it was like, and I'm driving, I'm biting my tongue, and my tongue's bleeding all over the place, and I hadn't seen anybody, I was just out there. I mean,
gibberish.
Yeah, and I thought that, and I thought, well, that would be really nice, but I forgot about that for years, and then I don't know what made me think of it again. But I thought, wow, here it is. This is happening.
That's your wildest dream.
That was a wild, crazy dream
at that
I was.
Time, yeah, that,
and I was under the influence, so
right?
I discounted it
mm-hmm.
because it probably didn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But we're running out of time, and at this point, I want to thank you guys for being
Absolutely.
Here. It was a great show.
You guys did amazing.
Stacy did an incredible job. Thank you, dear. Mm-hmm. You're the
You're
best.
You're always amazing. You know that.
You too.
Yeah,
and,
definitely. You know, it's been
May 16th.
No, don't
May
16th, stop.
May
16th.
Don't stop.
You guys
got
to come back.
Don't.
We're going to have a 2-hour show of all the people that were on for the first year, and you guys fit into that criteria.
That
May 16th.
Great.
It's a 2-hour show. Stacy's going to do the hula dance or something for
something.
When people get here. Yeah. Yeah.
May 16th.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be at my son's wedding. That's a wildest dream.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
And
it's a Monday.
I hope you have a wonderful
time.
I have
to double check.
Where's he getting married at?
Pittsburgh.
Huh?
We can do the show.
I'll give you
there.
A shout out.
Yeah, we'll shout you
in.
Out.
Okay.
Call in, yeah.
Call in.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. All right.
All right, that would
yeah.
be great. Okay. I want to thank everybody for listening. Stacy, again, wonderful job. Thanks to my two guests again. I appreciate them coming out. And let's go, Nova. We'll see you next week. Thanks.